Okie dokie, boys and girls. You thought I was going to say okie dokie pokey, but I didn't.
And I didn't think you were going to say that at all.
You didn't think so?
No, I thought you were going to say okie dokie, boys and girls, like you always do.
Okay.
That's what I thought was coming. Okay. If you'd have said pokey, I would have been shocked. Floored, even.
Alright, well, as you can tell, it's Captain Josh Olive with Fish and Frank here and Captain Josh Olive over there. And we've been having all kinds of discussions today. And part of it is with charter boat captains, inshore charter boat captains and stuff. And Josh is an up-and-coming inshore charter boat captain. And I obviously was a captain, and I still am technically. I don't charters anymore, but technically I still am a charter boat captain. And it's about perceptions. And just like people right now, because they look at social media, they read the evening news, and they think the fishing's bad, and the perception is everything's all horrible, and you listen to all these charter boat captains, it's the end of the world. Well, it's really not. And it's like right now, the state decided to make a county-by-county closure on a lot of these. Snook is closed, Redfish is closed. But DeSoto County is still open. Now, we're hearing stories that the FWC is sitting on the river and going to stop everybody coming back, and they're going to do barricades, and they're going to be fining everybody and all that. But I literally talked to FWC before that, and it falls under the same rules or rulings as if you're fishing in federal waters coming back through state waters to get home. It's a bridge in the law, because you can't go out there and fish and eat all the fish and then come home. You are going to bring some of those fish home, and you do have the right to go from where you caught the fish legally back to your home port, back to your house.
And for example, if you were to go out into federal waters and harvest a hammerhead shark, which is totally legal to do in federal waters but not legal to do in state waters, then to bring that fish back home, what you have to do is, as soon as you stop fishing, you're leaving federal waters, you're coming back through state waters, you have to come all the way back to your home port, which is where you dock your boat or where you launched your boat, and bring it right back to that point. You can't stop, you can't fish, you can't go get lunch, you can't nothing. You just got to transit your fish all the way back.
Now, exactly.
That's the law for federal and in state waters. Now, what I'm not sure about still, and I know you and I talked about this, and you were adamant that the FWC folks told you one thing, and I'm not calling you a liar. I want to make very clear, no one is calling Fish and Frank a liar here.
I did my due diligence, though.
But I don't trust FWC, especially the law enforcement people. Was that who you talked to? Were they all law enforcement folks?
No, one is one of the guys in charge.
Gotcha.
Two of them were guys in charge.
Okay. Because if you read the executive order, it doesn't say anything specifically about possession other than you can only possess in these areas briefly to take a measurement and a photograph, and that's it. So
everybody with a snook or a redfish in their freezer right now is breaking the law and should go to jail, and they have a special part in hell for them.
That's not possession.
Yes, it is.
It
if it's in their freezer, it's in their possession.
FWC.
You're telling me that you have this fish, it's not in your possession?
FWC's possession regulation does not include fish possessed off the water, except for...
So as long as I got it in my car, I'm cool?
The one exclusion is redfish, where you have an actual possession limit off the water, which is 6 fish. However, what they told me is that it no longer applies once you have the fish at your home. So basically, if you're going to poach fish, get them home as quick as you can, because once you have them at home, it no longer counts against possession.
So backyard legal is really backyard legal?
No. Unless you get them in your freezer real quick. It's a cluster. There's no question.
So all I'm saying is I went through and talked to the guys. I'm not going to say their names because I'm not going to put them on the spot. Everything nowadays is, oh my God, you're a jerk. Well, let's face it. What do you think of this? Well, you're a racist, you're a bigot. What do you think of that? Well, you're a racist, you're a bigot. This is the way people argue nowadays. And it's just not worth it. But basically, charter boat captains, inshore charter boat captains, in my opinion, are some of the biggest offenders for as far as they go out and they have customers in the boat, and they take two redfish for their customers, or three, or one, whatever, how many customers they have on a trip. And then they go on the trip later that day, and those, the next people get on the boat, and their recreational bag limit is one per person, so they get another one, two, three, four, whatever it is on the boat. And then they go out the next day and do it again, and the next day, and the next day, and they're taking legal limits of trout, redfish, snook, snappers, sheephead, all these fish, triple tail, cobia, and they do this day after day after day after day with different people on the boats, but that same boat, that same captain, is taking massive amounts of fish. Now, we have never thought of a charter boat captain, I never have, I don't know anybody else who has, as a commercial fishing vessel. But the more I break it down in my head, and remembering the fishing trips that I had, and I took people out and would literally take, you know, hundreds of redfish a year, and dozens of snook and trout and everything else for my customers, never thinking I was doing anything because I followed state laws and I was, you know, played by the rules and, you know, thinking I was a pretty good guy. But when I look back on the massive amounts of fish my boat brought in and people took home to eat, it's staggering numbers. And times that by 50, 100, 200 boats out there a day, and we wonder where some of the fish supplies have gone, where some of the fish stocks have gone. Well, this inshore commercial charter boat fishing is literally a massive, it's to add to the list of too many people, red tide, pollution. Let's see, I had a list here. Let me see what my list was. Blame for lack of fish. Too many people, too many tournaments, shrinking habitat, pollution, commercial fishing, and red tide. I think add to that list charter boats.
Well, add to that list anybody who's fishing, because while charter boats...
Well, that's an easy thing. That's an easy way to sidestep the issue. The issue is on one single subject, charter boat fishing. Now, yes, what I said before in the first time was too many people fishing, too many anglers. So that's already there. This is a specific point about a specific issue. Charter boats, charter boat fishing. Now, true or false, as a charter boat captain, you're out in the water more, you catch more fish, you abide by the legal limits, but those legal limits are hit again and again and again and again, day after day after day. True or false?
With some charter captains, yes. With some charter captains, no.
Well, some charter boat captains can't catch fish, so they don't apply.
Right, that's very true. But you have people who are going out there and who are catching these fish, but who are not keeping their limits or not keeping anything close to their limits in many cases. You know, a lot of charter captains will not keep snook on their charters because
this sounds like a charter boat captain trying to present the best side of their industry while ignoring the other side of their industry.
The bad side exists. Well, okay, this is the same thing with recreational fishing. When people start to talk about the positives of recreational fishing and nobody wants to point out, well, there's some people, like you mentioned, the backyard limits. A lot of people poach fish. A lot of people take more than they're allowed to. That's a thing. That happens in recreational fishing, and we all know it.
And now we have another example of legal overtaking. Legal too much.
I'm not saying that it doesn't happen. I'm not saying that there are not charter captains who go out there and catch their limit for their clients, put them on ice as often as they possibly can. There definitely are. And to throw out something that's actually illegal that goes along with that, it's common for some of these charter captains to go out and catch not just their clients' limits, but also their personal bag limit on a trip, and do that twice a day, and now you've taken double your daily limit.
So my only point is that I think that charter boats should be either listed, because we were talking about a special type of commercial fishing vessel, because they're not exactly like a longliner or a purse seiner or all these other big heavy-duty commercial boats, which bring in tons of fish every day. When I think about all the fish that died in the red tide, which was tons of fish, and I think of what I used to bring in as a commercial fisherman, which was tons of fish a day,
right,
or twice a week, three times a week, you know, we would literally bring in tons of fish. A small mullet boat going out capturing mullet easily hauls 5,000 pounds back.
Which is why it's not really fair to lump charter captains in straight with the commercial, because even if you're doing two trips a day, and even if you're keeping full limits of trout and redfish for four clients, plus your own limit twice, I mean, if you had to bring that number of fish to sell as just the fish, you wouldn't be making a living as a commercial fisherman. It's not enough. So
I will go with you on special, like, they need to be put in a rural class of their own, where they have laws that are for charter boats. You know, quotas, limits, maybe catch and release only if you're inside the barrier islands. Fish don't have that many places to hide. And a lot of these captains are really good. I can name you several that really are on the fish pretty much every trip they go out. Now, I can name you several that don't catch any fish, you know, on their charters, that only get one or two fish if they're lucky. I can name you several that are kind of in between on that. Not all charter boat captains are the same. Not all charter boat captains are equal skill or have as many clients. But the rules and the laws for these boats should be separate from recreational fishing. They are not recreational anglers. They are commercial anglers.
So if you look at what National Marine Fisheries Service is doing on the federal side, you'll see some of that starting to happen already. If you look at Red Snapper, for example, there's a separate season for recreational
quota, separate
versus
season for versus head boats than for recreational people,
right,
or for commercial.
And it happened with Red Snapper because Red Snapper were such an in-demand fish that people were fighting over, and so they said, well, we have to make it as fair and equitable as we can, and we know for a lot of the head boats, this is their livelihoods. You know, this is when they make their money. So we'll split it up into these types of groups. Now, they would like to do that with some other species too, but, you know, it's not the easiest thing to do because people fight about it.
And I'm kind of with you because of the point that this is how they make their living. And I do not believe, and I don't know if I would have ever thought of a charter boat as a commercial fishing vessel if it wasn't for all them screaming about, there's too many people out here, we need to be catch, you know, these recreational guys take too many fish, we have too many anglers, too many people catching fish, we don't have any fish left. And I was thinking to myself, well, okay, and thinking about all the causes for a loss of fish, and then it dawned on me that, wait a minute, I know some of these captains who are really good, and they go out catch 30 redfish in a trip, they're catch and releasing, figure 5-7% mortality rate, plus the keeping of the fish for their customers, and how many fish they would keep during the course of a year compared to a recreational angler who, I would say the average recreational guy gets out once or twice a month if he's pretty lucky.
Right.
Whereas a charter boat captain's on the water, if they're lucky, 6 days a week.
I'm not disagreeing with you that charter captains have an outsize effect on a per hull basis. If you're looking at it that way, per boat, how many fish are caught, it definitely is going to be more fish on the charter captain's boats on average.
Yeah, some guys suck, so, you know, there's just no way around it. But
hence the average part.
You know, I'm just looking at the charter business in new eyes, in a new, you know, a little light bulb went off that said, wait a minute, I think I'm looking at this industry wrong. I am in the fishing business. I'm not a recreational angler. I'm in the fishing business. I'm here to sell tackle, help people catch fish, you know, try and, you know, add a little bit of, you know, environmentalist, a little bit of conservative. But the basic thing is people like catching fish. They like eating fish.
Well,
and I think that trying to get people to be reasonable about it, have one or two fish dinners in the freezer, but no more than that. And if you want to, once you've used that one up, go back and get another one. And no waste is the biggest thing I push, because I don't like having fish in the freezer where they get freezer burned. You might, that's a kill thing that makes no sense.
Right. You might as well just fillet it and throw it back in the water.
Yeah, you might as well just, you know, put a knife in it and throw it back in the water.
So
you didn't use it.
The thing about this is that you're very clear on where you approach this from. You're clear of what your place is in the fishing world. You know what you do. I think a lot of these charter captains are not really understanding what their place is and what they're supposed to do. Because if you see some of the messages some of these guys have been preaching for the last few months, it's a very strong negative, down vibe. I mean,
and
if I believe
for all my listeners out
saying,
there, go on the internet and look at the captains who are posting all this gloom and doom stuff, and don't hire them. For God's sakes, they're not catching fish. They're not going to give you a good day. They're upset. They're angry. They're not going. You're not going to enjoy the day with them. So avoid them. Go with people who are happily out there catching their fish, keeping reasonable bag limits. You know, just go with the people who are in a good state of mind.
Right. And I get being upset and angry, okay? The red tide situation, the nasty water that we've had around here, the fish kills, it makes me upset and angry. I know it makes you upset and angry. But it's not the end of the world. You know, there are still fish to be caught. There are still places that you can go. There are still things that you can do.
And this is actually a better August on average for catching fish than what we've had for the last several years.
Right, and that's what these charter captains need to be about, is this, you know, saying, yes, there's bad things going on, but there's enough places you can hear about the bad things. I want to tell you about some of the positives, and
but
we're not
getting
there.
The problem with it is, it opened my eyes to a different look about charter fishing. And I think it's time that people think of them differently, that they're not the good old recreational angler guy. They're not the bad guys, but they're not the good guys. And when you look at fish take, fish catching, fish overall, these are not the good guys. They may not be the bad guys, but they're definitely not the good guys.
Well, and the simple fact of it is that way too many charter captains I know, they don't really appreciate the resources that they're out there using. You know, even the guys who are not harvesting too many fish, their catch and release mortalities are way too high because they let people mishandle fish, they let people fight fish for way too long. They're more focused on their clients than they are on the fish's well-being. And I get you need to pay attention to your clients, they need to have a good time, they need to have their photos to take back home, but you got to take care of your resource too. And I get after these guys frequently on social media for, why are you holding that snook like that? Why is that client dangling a 30-pound snook by just the tip of its jaw? What are you doing? Why do you have that big tarpon up out of the water? Your release mortality is too high with stuff like that. If you're going to be a charter captain, you need to be a good steward of the resource. You need to pay attention to that stuff. And I get that it only increases your release mortality by 1% or 2%. But 1% or 2% over the course of a year is huge.
All I'm saying is, I want my listeners and my people to think. And that's what we try and do. We get people to look at the world more the way it is rather than what we think it is. And it's like catch and release. Everybody talks that catch and release is a great thing. Well, I have worked and lived in countries where catch and release is illegal. And they think it's a bad thing. They think it's a horrible thing. I spent too much time outside of the United States to think as a normal American, where we think that our ideas are the only ones and the best way to do it. It may or may not be. I mean, I truly love my friends and neighbors and country people and all that kind of stuff. And sometimes I'm actually proud to be an American. And I actually am more now
sometimes,
than I have been in a long time. I'm not always proud to be an American. I've been outside of the country too much to always be proud I'm an American. I am proud of the people who live here, but we do have a government involved as being American, so that doesn't exactly always thrill me. But anyway, I think we need to go on to the fishing report, but my thing is, I want people to look at the charter fishing industry as part of the commercial industry, not part of the recreational industry, and just open our eyes to, I think we have something going on that none of us knew was happening. It's kind of a revelation for me.
Revelation is not a word.
Yes. Well, neither am I. That I never thought of before, and I just want to bring people's attention to it and see what they got to think. You can email me, frank@fishandfranks.com, or call me at the store. Anyway, I don't know of really much of anything going on up the Peace River right now. The one thing I do know that goes on that none of us knew about, and talking to Greg from the Marine Fisheries and some of the other people, Betty Stogler and all them, who are actually people I respect because they're not agenda scientists. They just go out. Who's the snook guy? I can't remember his name.
Oh, it's right on the tip of my tongue.
Yeah. So. I mean, he's an awesome scientist. Went out to do snook studies with no agenda, just to do a snook study. And I can't remember, his name is on the tip of my tongue, just like Josh. He should be unbelievably famous because I can't get it out. But anyway, what they have found is these snook, when the rivers are flowing heavy like this, that's when the snook go up rivers.
Because that's when the food is out.
And that's when the food is out, and right now...
Think about this, okay? Look at the Peace River as your example, because that's the one that's going to have a lot of snook in it. The Peace River, every year when it floods, it overflows its banks. And when it overflows its banks, it flows up into the woods, and you have all kinds of extra habitat and places where critters can get to. And when the snook are able to get into those areas, those are very full of food. And one of the top foods that's in those areas is crayfish.
Yeah.
So they have a lot of different choices to eat, and what they've also found is that when the waters start to drop, that's when you really get a flow of fish up into there because the waters are contracting back into their banks. All those crayfish, all those armored catfish, all those little things that have been living up on the banks in the woods, now they have to try to find a place inside the river channel itself, and there's not enough hiding places for everybody. Some of them are left out, and they get eaten. And the snook just go crazy.
Snook, tarpon, redfish go all the way up. I mean, we hear steady stories up in Wachula about this.
Think about how much
redfish... What county is in Wachula in?
Hardy.
It's in Hardy. Okay, yep. So it goes Charlotte, DeSoto, Hardy.
Yep.
Okay. You can go all the way up to Hardy County and have some excellent snook fishing.
Oh, yeah.
So you've got DeSoto County, which is open, Hardy County, which is open. I don't know what's east of Lee County. I should know the county there, but I don't know what it is.
I think it's Glades. It might be Hendry. There's Glades and Hendry, one stack on top of the other.
Yeah, and I don't remember which one it is. But if you go up to Coosahatchee to the next county, snook season is open there. And
it's open on Okeechobee.
So, but I'm just saying, there is places on the west coast of Florida you can go snook fishing at, and I'm going to be making a couple trips upriver, giving you guys some stuff, talking more about FWC, but DeSoto County snook season is open, and Hardy County snook season is open. So,
and if you need that redfish fix, same deal going on there. You think about how much redfish love shrimp, how much they love crabs. You know, we're always talking about how redfish feed on crustaceans. You think they love those things? What do you think they think of a crayfish? They go bonkers for them. So a redfish does not care about fresh water, at least not in the short term. They're happy to go into water that has no salt content in it, and they'll swim right up those rivers when the crayfish are abundant and trying to get their hiding places back into the channel of the river. That's when you're going to have a lot of redfish moving up there and taking advantage.
So I'm going to get up there and really kind of scout some spots out for you up there in DeSoto, Hardy, you know, so
in the hinterlands.
Let's see if I messed this up.
You probably didn't.
I probably did, but I might not have. Oh yeah, I messed it up. Okay, this is gonna take me just a second to fix this. All right, hang on, I'm trying to get the
wish I knew jokes to tell in the meantime.
Yeah, the woman came in with a little Johnny joke, but I'm not telling that one.
Yeah, that's the problem. Everybody that I get my jokes from, they're non-repeatable.
Yeah, it was an awesome little Johnny joke, but I mean, there's just no way I can go back on that one. Alright, come on. Alright, over, up, copy. Alright, there we are.
What do you call a fish with no eyes?
Okay.
I was trying to think of something clean.
It's right up there with how do you tell if an elephant's been in the refrigerator. by the footprints in the peanut butter.
Yeah.
Which okay. I look for every morning. But yes. Why would you keep the peanut butter in the fridge anyway?
Some people
That's how
do.
I tell an elephant's been in the pantry.
Okay, yeah. Well, peanut butter does not need to be refrigerated, but a lot of people lived up north put everything in the refrigerator.
I don't even refrigerate my eggs.
And it's just one of those things. I mean, with my wife, if I leave the mayonnaise out, it has so many preservatives in it now. You could not get mayonnaise to go bad if you buy it out of the grocery store. I mean, it's as solid in sitting on the counter as mustard and ketchup is.
All that happens is that the oil will separate out from the emulsion, so you get kind of a yellowish skim on the top of it. That's it.
But, you know, it goes with the same reason. I just go in the refrigerator to find the peanut butter because I know that's where she's going to put it.
Oh, this is a weird fishing report.
So, okay,
I-75. Well, I've been hearing about some black drum up there, although not as many as I've been hearing further down the harbor. I've also been hearing about some smaller tarpon up there. I've had a couple guys tell me that they've seen some bigger ones, but nobody seems to have hooked any of those bigger ones. And the smaller ones are being... they're being tarpon. They're not really wanting to feed very well. You know, I've talked to guys who are going up there fly fishing, throwing all kinds of stuff at them. So it's mostly looking at tarpon, catching black drum.
Okay. That's going to take us down to the 41 Bridge.
Kind of the same thing going on down there with the addition of some sea trout. I've had some decent reports of sea trout down there near the Lashley Pier in that area around the power lines. None of them seem to really be keepers, but they're having fun catching and releasing them anyway.
And one of the things that I was surprised about is trout, which I usually think of as a very delicate species because they won't live well in a live well, is actually a pretty hardy catch and release fish if you remember to wet your hands, wet your rag, wet your gloves. If you handle a trout with dry hands or dry gloves or a dry towel, you killed that fish. As long as whatever you're handling the trout is wet, it doesn't take the slime off the fish. And when you release them, they have a very high survivability rate on catch and release, way higher than I would have thought.
I tell people it's the same as when you stub your toe. You stub your toe, what do? Shake it off. Hook a trout, what do? Shake it off. Hold onto the hook with the pliers, just shake it off. Grab the hook with your fingers, shake it off. Let him go.
What's the name of that girl with the, shake it off. I don't remember it's a song she's got. She's the country girl.
I don't know that song, but...
Pop. The one who's got all the teeny bopper fans.
There is a song by punk girl band called the Donnas.
Really?
Which, yeah, look that up sometime. You might even like it.
What's it called?
I think it's called Shake It Off, but okay. it's actually about...
who am I thinking
about
of?
About dirty girls that like dirty
the
things.
Pop. The pop.
I have no idea. Oh, is it Shakira, Shaking Your Hips?
Not Shania Twain, but the teeny bopper one. She always writes about her relationships.
What do I know about teeny boppers? Okay. You're lucky I know about the Donnas. That's from the 90s. That's what
okay.
I know.
Lashley Pierce. Some... trout. Hell of a fishing report today. Some trout. All right. Anything else at Lashley?
Yeah, I've heard about a few snook caught over there doing some catch and release. Most of them are on the smaller side, but I did hear one about 35 that was caught there a couple nights ago.
Okay. Bayshore Pier?
Yeah. I haven't heard anything out of Bayshore, except for bad news.
We had the weird report that they're actually thinking they're going to take down Bayshore Pier or something?
Yeah, it's not really clear yet, and we're talking about the westernmost Bayshore Pier, not the eastern one that's closer to the bridge, the one that's further away from the bridge. The engineering report is back on that to Charlotte County, and it looks like the damage from Hurricane Irma was more than what they thought, so they're saying that pier may not be rebuildable. It may need to be redone ground up. And of course, that's expensive.
Right.
You know, there's money involved there in figuring out what to do. So I don't know where we're at with that. It might be a while. Heck, it might be never. It'd be a real shame. I mean, there's been a pier there for, what, 130 years?
Something like that. It's been there a long, long time.
It used to be a cattle dock. used to be where they'd load them up, and it used to go way, way farther out into the harbor.
Yeah.
To where you could actually put a freighter.
Yeah, it was. It's been a pier there for as long as I can remember. I've seen it destroyed by a storm, burned down two or three times, or have parts of it burnt two or three times. I've seen it rebuilt for county stuff. It's just been up and down ever since I've been here, and so for 40 years I've been looking at it. So I'm just gonna put some question marks there. Let's see. Yeah, it would be a real weird thing not to have a Bayshore Pier.
It would be.
Okay.
It would be a shame.
Port Charlotte Canals.
Port Charlotte Canals have been getting an interesting mixed bag of fish. We've been seeing some redfish up in there. They don't seem to be evenly spaced either. It's like some docks will have half a dozen redfish hanging out underneath them, and some places have zero. So it's kind of hard to tell why some of those places are attracting redfish, but I'll tell you that if you're closer to a bridge, you're more likely to have some of those fish around. We're also seeing black drum moving in and out of there. We haven't seen schools of fish. We're seeing onesies, twosies, in a couple cases, threes and fours gathered up. And they seem to be frustrating people quite a bit because people are seeing them but not being able to get them to take baits. If you have those fish around, go out there in the evening, drop your shrimp or crab down to the bottom and see if they'll eat it then. That's a little bit more likely. We're also seeing some sand bream being caught out there, which sand bream are an absolutely fantastic eating fish. If you aren't going to be able to get your river snook but you want your snook fix, hey man, go catch you some sand bream. That's one of the best eating fish out there and the closest thing to a snook that you're probably going to find.
And I call them the saltwater crappie because it is just a wonderful eating fish. It's light, delicate meat that's really quite tasty.
You just don't get big boneless fillets off them.
No, you get small fillets, but that's why I call it saltwater crappie. You get about the same, a little bit better than a crappie fillet out of them, but I would say more meat than a crappie, but very, very similar to crappie fishing. Elgamine Pier, anything going on?
Yeah, I've heard from a few of those guys up there too. The same tarpon that are frustrating people around 75 and 41 have been frustrating people around Elgamine, but they do seem to be a little bit more likely to actually bite something. They're having some success with bait busters and big swim baits over there, mostly in the darker colors, and mostly fishing either real early in the morning or real late in the evening. Had a couple guys go over there doing some snook fishing and mostly coming away unimpressed, although they are catching a few fish. They're not catching what they would expect to over there.
Yeah, it's a really early in the morning thing, kind of before daylight.
Yeah. Well, and most of the snook guys are nocturnal anyway.
Yeah.
So, but they're saying that they're not getting what they would
hope. Are the trout still hanging around over there at all? Or?
I hadn't heard anybody talking about trout. No.
All right. Moving on to the Myakka River area as a whole.
So going up the Myakka, kind of the same thing that we're seeing up the Peace. You're going to get some of those snook and redfish hanging out up there. And if you're in some of the canals off the Myakka, the sand bream up there have been pretty good, along with the Mayan cichlids. More of those than in the Port Charlotte canals.
Okay.
And sand bream are notorious for being picky about their baits, but all you need is peeled shrimp tail. They don't like it with the shell on it for whatever reason. Just...
Well, they have a soft mouth. If you've ever seen a video of that...
they got rubber lips.
Yeah, the one... What's that fish? The lionfish. They eat in almost the same fashion. Their mouth extends out. You know, when it's retracted up against their face, then all of a sudden it will literally come out inch and a half. It just pulls way out in kind of a mini elephant's trunk. And
it's a tube.
Tube mouth. And...
And what they're usually
doing... They don't really have a good way of chewing stuff up, so they want it soft.
They're sucking little worms and stuff off the bottom is what they do most of the time. And you actually can use a freshwater worm for these fish, too. You know, if you're getting into an area where you are pretty consistently catching sand bream and you want to stop using shrimp because you want to save those for other things, worms will work.
Yeah, they do like worms. There's no doubt about that. So, all right. Anything else going up around the Myakka Cutoff, Hog Island?
Yeah, I haven't talked to anybody who's fished the cutoff on the outside of Hog Island. There's some deeper areas along the shoreline where there have been some redfish gathered up, and not necessarily underneath the mangroves, but sitting just off of the shoreline in some troughs. And these have been not really schools of fish, but gatherings, you know, where there's 10, 15 redfish in there kind of loosely hanging out.
Let's say 2 to 10.
Sure.
Yeah. It's because
it's a gathering.
Yeah.
It's when, when you say school, people picture, you know, a big, tight, clustered group of tailing redfish, and that's not what we're seeing.
No, you got a couple fish here and a few fish there and a few fish here.
Yeah, there. Spread okay. out.
South Gulf Cove canals?
I've had some reports in there. Again, not a whole lot, but Mayan cichlids, smaller snook, and the bass bite in there seems to have been picking up quite a bit over the last week or so. Now, I usually only get a couple guys saying that they're catching bass, but now I'm still getting a couple guys saying they're catching bass, but they're catching a lot of them.
Really?
Yeah.
Any idea what they're using?
I know that the one guy was experimenting with different swim baits. He was using the, what's the Gambler? Easy?
Oh, yeah, the Big Easy and the Little Easy.
Little Easy.
Low on all them because all of a sudden the bass guys just went nuts on those Gamblers. And the good news is for all you bass folks, as of the first of the year, we're going to be adding, renting another unit here in the building, and it is going to be dedicated to freshwater fishing, bass lures of all types and descriptions and sizes. Not that they don't work in saltwater, but these will be a room with all traditional bass fishing stuff, whether it's jitterbugs, hula poppers, whopper ploppers, gambler worms, charlies, you know, all. I want to concentrate, I'm going to have still the national companies, but I want to concentrate a lot on smaller Florida companies that they're harder to find in chain stores. They don't, these are Florida-based companies, and I want to do more of that stuff.
You know, most of my, well, not most of, but a lot of my online searching has to do with fishing-related topics, so Google likes to show me a lot of fishing-related ads. They showed me an ad a couple of days ago, and I don't remember what the brand was, but somebody is coming out with a new version of a jitterbug-style bait. They've got a frog, they've got a bug, but it's got that jitterbug lip, and it looked like it was metal.
It's Livingston.
Was it Livingston?
Livingston has
Doesn't sound familiar. I thought it was something else.
Well, Livingston, for quite a while, has had a jitterbug front on several different lures, and I've carried them here in the store, and I may even go back to carrying more of the Livingston. Livingston made kind of a name for themselves by having a battery in it, and it makes a sound in the water. It goes beep, 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 fish attractant sound. Some of them, actually, I think, may have had lights in them, but they're most well known for their noise-making lures, that when you put them in the water, there's electrodes that the water makes contact with, and they send out a sound that attracts fish. And they're actually quite popular, a little on the pricey side, but they're actually not a bad bait, and they do catch fish.
So you know what I like, though, is a jitterbug.
I like the jitterbugs, too. I'm really mad at the company.
Oh, what did they do now?
Well, that's Pradco.
They pulled a stupid.
Yeah, they pulled a real stupid. And I had out of all their brands, because they cover Bomber, Rebel, Arbogast, Hedden, we had 400 and some of their products in here, and they changed the way we have to buy them. And I hate raising the prices because now I have to buy differently. So I had my feelings hurt. And when I get my feelings hurt, I have a hard time
spending
money on that. I am going to keep some jitterbugs. We're going to keep some jitterbugs, hula poppers, because Rebel, because they are a standard of the industry.
I mean, my jitterbugs and my Zara Spooks, those are my favorite lures.
And we're
going to
keep them. But the only thing is, I'm keeping the Zara Spooks more for the freshwater market, because the Skitterwalk is actually a tougher, stronger bait, and we do have some issues with the Zara Spooks pulling apart.
I do not dispute that the Skitterwalk is tougher, but from my experience, the Zara Spook is a better bait. The fish like it better. And it might just be that the way I work it, I'm just so used to fishing that bait. I've only been doing it for 35 years, so maybe that's why.
What you want to try is the Skitter V, all right? if you're a real strong Zaraspook fanatic and you really love throwing the Zaraspook, try the Rapala Rapala Skitter V. And it has a V-shaped bottom on it. And Carl, who was just a fanatic with the Zaraspook, is now just all in on this Skitter V. He just loves it. When I was doing a lot of bass fishing, I had gone over to that other one I can't remember the name of. God, I'm getting old. But anyway,
older.
So Westwall. Let's get back into fishing report.
Oh, is that what we were doing?
Yes, we're doing a fishing report.
Again, I'm getting a mixed snook and redfish report over there too, with the redfish being a little bit more traditional and laying in the deeper holes and in the creek mouths. Snook are kind of doing the same thing. Snook activity has not been great during the daytime, which is kind of what you would expect. But guys who are getting out there early are doing okay with it. The redfish seem to be fine as long as you're able to pitch something smelly up underneath the edge there. On the outside of the bar, we've been seeing a mixed bag of fish, and it's starting there on the west wall, but it's going all the way down. So as we go spot to spot, you're going to hear kind of the same thing here. Been some bait fish out there and a mixed bag of jacks, Spanish mackerel, bluefish, ladyfish, just tearing them up. And where those fish happen to be is kind of going to depend on the tide. Stronger incoming tide is bringing them farther up the harbor, but on the west side, of course, that outgoing tide has a little bit more of an effect. So sometimes you're seeing them there on the outgoing headed south instead of on the incoming.
And it's been really weird. We actually made inroads with one of the frozen bait companies to get larger shrimp tails for our frozen bait thing, because so many of the fish are keyed in on that dead bait, laying still, stinking more. And now these larger shrimp tails really seem to be the ticket for a lot of these. Crabs and dead shrimp tails really seem to be kind of the thing. But going on to Cape Hayes, anything down there?
Going on to Cape Hayes, you know, I've had some fewer reports from down there because people are still concerned that there might be red tide in the area, even though the red tide reports are non-existent for pretty much all of the Charlotte Harbor area right now. So the folks who have been going have been finding a few pompano out there on the Cape, especially in the rockier drop-off areas. I've had, again, some of the reports of redfish and snook, but they're a little bit more scattered there when you're actually out on the Cape Hayes bar versus being up tight against the shoreline. There are some, but not very many. Had a couple of flounder reports out there too, and they're a little bit bigger than what I would have expected. I'm thinking maybe some of our southern flounder actually came inside the harbor. These don't seem to be the little gulf flounder that we expect out there. These are more like 18 inchers.
Okay.
The one thing that confused me is I haven't heard of any bonnet head sharks over there.
We had a couple reports. It was about a week ago, and there was starting to get some decent reports of bonnet sharks out there, but we really haven't had a lot of reports on much. Most of the reports I'm going off of are on a few people with a few phone calls. They're not as strong as that, but the people I'm talking to are pretty good about telling me what's there. But numbers of people going out fishing really declined in August.
Right.
Less people fish in August than have in 10 years.
And we're about to get to the point of the fishing report where we go around Cape Hayes, where I don't have a whole lot to tell you.
No,
because
there's question marks. Yeah.
So.
Bull Bay, Turtle Bay. Now, I've heard Turtle Bay's been pretty good, but Bull Bay's still pretty iffy.
Yeah. And Turtle has been, there's been more life there than people were expecting when they went into it. Mostly what I'm hearing out of there is trout. I'm also hearing some of that mixed bag of the ladyfish, bluefish, not so much with the Spanish mackerel inside the bay, but they are getting some of the bait, and it's been real small in there. So you need something small to throw at them if you're going to try to match that hatch. Otherwise, throw something that makes a ruckus, because a lot of fish are getting injured in those feeding frenzies, and the fish attack the injured fish. So, you know, throw something that makes noise if you can't match that tiny hatch.
And actually not bad. Bull, I would say, is iffy. Yeah, not as good as it could be. But, you know, I've heard a few reports of some snook and possible redfish back there in Bull Bay, but I'm going to hold off on that a little bit. because I don't have the enough reports to say what it is.
Yeah, it's just not enough. To
Cape Hayes Danger Reef.
Haven't heard anything out there.
Okay. We had Morris last week, and he said they were really doing good with mackerel, ladyfish, jacks, stuff like that.
Well, that makes total sense. I mean, it's right there in the area. If you have the bait fish around, and if you have the birds around, then yeah, that stuff's going to be all over around.
We don't know
area.
If they're still there now because I don't have the reports. Last week, we had Morris in here, and he works right there, so he literally drives by him and sees the fish and
works on
them.
When you get that kind of activity going on down there, it's going to be wherever the fish happen to be. You know, wherever the bait fish move to, that's where the fish move to. So they can be anywhere from, you know, the intercoastal waterway up along where Gasparilla Marina is, down south towards the backside of Cape Costa and over towards Boquilla. They can be in Boca Grande Pass. They can be outside Boca Grande Pass. That whole general open area that comprises lower Charlotte Harbor and Gasparilla Sound is going to have those fish in it.
Speaking of that, I just put question marks in Gasparilla Sound because I got nothing and I don't think you have either.
I've talked to a couple guys who've been kayaking in there and they said they weren't finding a whole lot by way of fish.
All right, Placida Pier, Placida Trestle. Now, this is supposed to open, isn't it?
The Placida Pier is open. It opened yesterday morning. And I have not talked to anybody who has fished it. I have talked to a couple people who fished around the trestle, and they were reporting some mangrove snapper there. Not huge snapper, but, you know, keeper fish, 10, 12 inches. So I assume that there are going to be some fish down there. What we really need is some people to get off their cans and go down to the Placida Pier and fish it and give us some reports. That's what we need.
Yeah.
People fishing.
So I would say arguably this is, for as far as August went, as far as catching fish goes, this is one of the better Augusts we've had for actually people catching fish. The only thing was, not many people were doing it. I will tell you, the people who have been fishing here over August, going out fishing, have called it paradise in Charlotte Harbor. This has been their best August in years. Been good numbers of fish to catch and no boats or people on the water.
Well,
everybody's been scared off by social media and the news, and they're not on the water, so there's literally, they've been out there and seen days where they don't even see a boat.
Think about this. You know, one of the things that people complain about with redfish is, oh, well, the redfish behavior gets changed because they constantly get these boats buzzing the shorelines that they're trying to have their habitat on, and they got, you know, boats going over their heads constantly. It doesn't let a redfish be a redfish. Well, for the past 6 weeks, redfish have had a lot of opportunity to be redfish and do whatever they wanted to do without being harassed. Because people aren't out there fishing for them, they're not out there buzzing those shorelines. So if you want to get a feel for what redfish act like under a more natural circumstance, now's your chance. Go out and do it.
There's very little boats out there, very little people. You know, you kind of want to do it before people listen to this and go, hey, that really sounds good. And everybody piles in on the water.
Right.
But let's go up to Lemon Bay. Any reports?
Scattered. You know, I'm hearing from a few people that they're finding some trout up there. Had one guy who was telling me about the two enormous stingrays that he caught off of the pier. So I guess that's interesting. He said they were both over 4 feet in diameter, which is a pretty good size ray. But it hasn't been anything specific. It hasn't been any particular, you know, this is amazing right now. You need to go check it out. It's been more scattered fish here and there. And that's kind of what you expect from areas that are starting to recover from this red tide.
All right. Well, then I can put on the Englewood Pier report, big giant stingrays.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we need to put big and giant. Because when you're dealing with rays that are 4 feet across, that's not just a big ray. That's a big giant.
Big, comma, giant stingrays.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, that's 4 foot is big giant ones. I mean, that's literally like trying to pull a Hyundai out of the water.
Well, he had the heavier tackle because he was shark fishing. And he did not find any sharks, but he did hook into those two.
Okay. In the Gulf of Mexico.
Yeah, it's been kind of weird out there. You know,
it's kind of weird in here, so, you know.
The nearshore Gulf has been a little bit tricky for people. You know, you got some people going out and saying that they're running into nasty, dirty water. Some people are going out and saying they're finding dead fish, most of which are well-decayed dead fish, not fresh dead fish.
Been drifting around a long time.
Yeah. So you're getting people who say, oh, no, it's red tide out there. Well, maybe it is, maybe it isn't. You know, just using those as your cues is not really going to give you the right answer.
Like, we had people that said, oh, there's a whole bunch of dead fish over by Part Harbor. They had red tide and it killed all these fish. I'm like, no, kind of the wind just blew them in there because they were they were killed out by Boca Grande.
You had an incoming tide and a west wind.
Yeah, and the wind and the tide just put them over there. There's been no red tide in, you know, Pirate Harbor or Burnt Store or Matt Lachey. These places are awesome. Go to the restaurants at Matt Lachey. You're not going to choke. You're not going to cough. Go to the restaurants in Boquilla, Matt Lachey. You're going to have a great time. They got some great restaurants out there. They got some good fishing. They got some neat bait shops down there in Matt Lachey. You know, go in and do a little exploring. The area is fine. It's nice. There's no blue-green algae. There's no red tide. It's just water and fishing. Now it's brown water because it's river water.
That's what you expect. But can I just point out one thing to people to explain about the blue-green algae? Because I get a lot of people asking me about this. The blue-green algae that's coming down the river, coming down the Caloosahatchee River, people are concerned that blue-green algae is going to get into Charlotte Harbor and it's going to destroy things. The blue-green algae that we have in that area, not only is not in big mats like you think it is, like you've seen on TV. It's a real thin skim of the stuff underneath the surface of the water. So all you're getting is a very faint greenish hue on top of the water. It's not in big mats. It's not enough to cause any poisoning to you. You probably don't want to drink the water, but you could safely wade in it. You know, I probably wouldn't put my dog in it because the dog's not smart enough to not drink the water, but you know, it's okay to be around. It's okay to have your boat on top of. It's not going to poison you. And
Okeechobee is not poisoned.
Once that blue-green algae gets to salt water.
You know how many times I've heard that garbage?
Yeah.
Okeechobee's poisoned. I'm like, okay, Okeechobee's some of the best bass and crappie fishing in the world.
What I was told.
And it's all poisoned? Give me a break.
A woman told me that she lives in Cape Coral, and the water in her canal is as poisonous as cobra venom.
And it might be. Did you look at her lawn? 9 chances out of 10, she's got St. Augustine grass. It's bright green. She waters and fertilizes and pesticides the heck out of that. They do that, weed and feed stuff on it? And to keep it pretty so there's no weeds and no grass. And my grass is crabgrass and sand spurs. It hasn't seen fertilizer since the day we bought the property in the 90s.
So I asked her to send me a picture because she says she's got this blue-green algae and it's piled up right next to her seawall. Okay, send me some pictures of the blue-green algae. I'm really interested to see it. She sends me the pictures. Guess what it is?
Seaweed.
It's water lettuce.
It's
water lettuce, a floating freshwater plant, water lettuce.
That actually filters the water, makes it cleaner.
Piled up there because it's been pushed there by the wind.
It's beneficial.
So if you do have blue-green algae coming down the river, it's a freshwater blue-green algae. Once it hits salinity content that is 5% of seawater, 5%, it can no longer survive. It will not survive in even mild brackets.
I cannot believe nobody in Cape Coral has two boats and a seine net. All right, you go into the canal with two boats, you put a few seine nets together, you go in, you circle, you know, you run the net around the back of the canal, you hook the two boats up, you idle out to the river, and you turn around and go back in. All that stuff is going to go out, it's going to hit the river, it's going to be dead when it hits the Gulf of Mexico, no harm, no foul, let's just get it out of here. It takes two boats and a seine net. We've got to have this, and we got to have that, and we got to have special rulings, let's get D.C. involved. Give me a break. A couple of boats and some seine nets. We're pretty much golden. We can get 90% of it out in hours. I'm sorry.
I'm gonna need you to settle down just a little bit, and I'm also going to need you to stop bringing common sense to this argument.
I'm sorry. I just don't understand why things can't be just, okay, we got something in here we don't want. Oh, it's floating on the water. Well, let's put a net around it, drag it out, and take it out of here. Oh, gee, that was hard. Yeah, I can't figure that one out. All right. Reefs and wrecks out there in the Gulf. we're still hearing from a few of the guys going way out. Groupers in pretty much 80 feet of water.
I'm hearing as shallow as 60 with some guys catching some of these grouper. And the weird thing is that it doesn't seem like getting extra depth is getting you more keeper grouper. We kind of expect, especially here in the summertime, that the deeper you get, you're going to be getting into some cooler water, you're going to be getting some of those bigger fish. Right now, it seems like you're just as likely to catch that 14, 16 inch red grouper in 140 feet as you are in 60 feet, and you're just as likely to catch that 24 inch fish. Now, if you really want 30 inch plus, yeah, you're going to have to go to some deep water. But if you want to catch keeper fish, you don't have to go out super far. And we're also getting, especially on the ledges, some good reports of mangrove snapper and a handful of yellowtails from the guys who are willing to chum.
Okay. That was a lot, but I got it. I got the
get the gist of it?
No, I got latiges.
That's not a thing.
No, it really wasn't.
We can interpret a lot if we're used to the way you type, but that's not going to work.
That wasn't going to work. Okay, we're up to the passes. All right.
Okay. Clean and clear water right now.
All right, let's start in order here. Anything about Venice?
I have not heard anything about Venice, right. Except for they saw some bait up there, but there didn't seem to be any fish that were eating the bait.
Okay. Stump Pass.
I have not heard anything from Stump Pass.
Little Gasparilla.
I have not heard anything from Gasparilla Pass.
Boca.
I have heard a little bit from Boca Grande Pass. I heard that the shelling was terrible because too many people were on the beach taking the shells. I also heard that there were some snook in the surf. Imagine that. Live snook in the surf there around Boca Grande Pass.
Yeah, well, obviously, how could it's a figment of their imagination,
because
there can't possibly be any snook alive. Everything's dead and the world ended. You know, the meteorites have hit. We're done. We're dinosaurs. That was it. I just passed away. Captiva.
That noise hurt my ears. Don't do that. No, I have not heard anything from Captiva.
Okay. Redfish.
I heard somebody caught a cobia in Redfish Pass while they were trolling through there. That is a rumor.
Trolling. Rumored. All right. Let's see. Oh, wait a minute. I got one more. We'll just do those when I get down to it. All right. Walking the beaches. Anything? Any beach anywhere? I guess you would say Boca, snook on the beach?
Yeah, down south.
Okay.
But that's really about all I've heard from people down there who are doing that. I haven't heard of a lot of people who are actually out walking the beaches. Again, you know, look at the current red tide reports. Things have cleared away from there. We're not seeing red tide on our beaches. We need people to go out and, you know, start looking for some of this stuff, because the fish are going to be coming back. And, you know, again, if you're not first on these fish, then they're going to do what fish always do when they're pressured. They're going to be harder to catch. So get while the getting's good.
Yeah, I mean,
basic here.
I would think that right now an MR-17 would be just awesome off the beaches up there with all the little snook.
With all the little bait fish that have been up there?
Yep.
I would think so. Maybe even that little Mira minnow.
Yeah. All right. Punarassis, Sanibel?
The only thing I've heard out of there is a scattering of snook. And they haven't been big ones. They've been smaller fish.
Okay. Clusanche River.
It's full of blue-green algae. How could there be anything in there?
Actually, I was talking to some guys, and they said the redfish are not doing bad up on the Clusanche, and if you get up around the locks and stuff, the snook are doing pretty good. But that ended, so. I just got to take a second to type that in.
Go ahead and type that in.
And
if you could just type that in real quick, that'd be great.
All right.
Got that typed in yet?
41. Yep, I'm done typing.
Okay, good.
Okay. I actually got it mostly good, too. Cape Coral. According to some of the bass guys, the bass fishing is pretty good. And getting a lot of requests for the same thing down at the Fort Myers store with the shad baits, those swim tail things.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a little different. It's Strike King's got a good one. I don't remember the name of it, but that Strike King one's starting to sell good. But the Gambler one is the one the guys are really looking at. But it's a lot of those paddle tails, and it's a weird paddle tail or swim bait because it's got a lot of ridges on it.
Yeah.
From the tail all the way up onto the head, it's just ridge after ridge after ridge, and it's a softer plastic. And I don't remember the Strike King name of theirs, and I think the Gambler, I think, was called the Easy. So, but both those are working really well right now.
It's supposed to be a high vibration bait, and you're meant to fish it mostly around heavy vegetation. And if you're used to fishing saltwater swim baits, with the freshwater ones, they're rigged a little bit differently. You're rigging it weedlessly. You're often skimming it right over the top of vegetation, emergent hydrilla, skimming it through some kind of standing reeds or even loose cattails. A lot of guys will also fish them over the top of pads and fish it almost like a frog, where you're kind of hopping it off of a pad, dropping it down into the water, then bringing it back up onto the next one. So, you know, a little bit different than how we fish our saltwater swim baits, but that's why it's got all those ridges, so that it can produce as much vibration as possible in an area where the fish are really going to have to hunt for that lure.
Okay.
I know you knew all that.
Yeah, right.
I was explaining it to you.
I can actually tell you that years ago I used to know all kinds of stuff. I'm not sure what I know anymore.
Until you start talking and see what comes out?
Yeah, you know, somebody was, I think the best description was, he says, you know, Frank, you're answering questions from all these different people, ask you where to go, what to do, and everything else. You have no idea what you said. You don't remember a thing you said. He said, but you're usually always right. Because, well, you this one asks you about this, and it might be crappie fishing a canal, and the guy wants to know about snookfish here, and another guy wants to know about this, or grouper, and you're literally going from one fish to the next one area, you know, all these different things, and you answer the question because you know the answer, but it's a question and answer, move on to the next thing, you
right.
know. And I guess that kind of sums it up. I know if I know, but I don't know if I know. Okay, Matt Lachey,
we've been getting some really good reports out of mixed bag of fish, but the number one thing has been redfish. And in Matt Lachey is a pretty big area. We talked about that on the
Fishing Talk Radio 92.9 FM every Saturday morning from 7 to 9.
Yeah, thank you. We talked about the area that is Matt Lachey, and it's big. And when we're talking about Matt Lachey here for the redfish, we're talking about the areas up north of the bridge, but not quite up as far as Two Pines. And we're looking for oyster bar areas. That's where most of the redfish have been hanging out. And here's the thing, with the lower pressure that those fish have been getting, especially in the evenings, we've actually been seeing some tailing redfish up in there, which that's a cool thing to see. It's something that a lot of people haven't seen in a long time, but the fish are feeling comfortable enough to gather up in feeding groups, and they're not being pressured as much, and they're actually sticking tails out of the water and doing that redfish thing, which is really cool to see. If you're not digging the redfish, that's fine. There's been some trout up there. Again, most of them are small. Couple of keeper fish, but not that many. Scattered snook, most of them small, a couple of bigger ones, and we're starting to see some of the black drum in there also.
Okay. Okay. And going down to Pine Island Sound. What's going on down there?
Not as many people fishing on the Pine Island Sound side of the place. The folks who are in the open water are finding that same group of predators that we were talking about earlier on the little bait fish, the mackerel, jacks, ladyfish, bluefish group. They're also seeing a few more sharks in Pine Island Sound than what we're hearing about in the northern part of the harbor. Those, again, are going to hang around with that same group of fish. They're going to be underneath them. And some of those sharks have been pretty good size. We're talking about black tips in the 4 to 6 foot range and bulls in the 4 to 7 foot range. So decent sized fish.
Okay.
I can't imagine that there aren't you know, redfish and snook doing their redfish snook things around the islands and around the oyster bars and stuff, but I just haven't had any reports.
Well, I think a lot of it boils down to, is anybody going there because they've heard so many of the people say that there's no fish and everything's dead, so why bother to go look?
Right. But these places, they come back to life surprisingly quick. And if you're not willing to go look, then you won't find out.
But, you know, I tell people, during World War I, the Spanish flu killed well over 1 million people. Nobody won World War I. Everybody got sick and went home. We always say the U.S. was the winner in World War I, but the truth of the matter is, the war ended. Germany didn't invade anybody. They didn't. They got as far as they could, and then everybody got sick and went home. The World War I ended with the Spanish flu, and millions of people died, but all of a sudden, there was people went back to their villages and everything else, and before you know it, you didn't remember that millions of people died. And it's kind of the same way with red tide and the fish. We have millions of fish die, and it's a bad thing. But all of a sudden, out of somewhere, these fish show up again. And maybe they were in other areas and say, oh, look, there's nobody here. Let's go hang out here.
Right.
I have no idea how or why it happens. I just know it does. And what we think is ending and the world's over and it's not going to happen again sometimes just happens.
Yeah. And that's just the way nature works. And, you know, we're not here to BS it. Yeah, I mean, it's tragic loss with all those fish, and a lot of fish died, but a lot of fish lived is the part that goes along with it that people seem to keep forgetting.
That was kind of my point with the whole World One comment, is that a lot of people died, but a lot of people lived. And we go back to the Black Plague. A lot of people died, and a lot of people lived. It's kind of the same thing with fish and red tides and this and that and the next thing. You just, when you think nothing could possibly ever get through that, all of a sudden there they are. And you're like, you have no idea how it happens or why it happens. We just thank whatever supreme deity you believe in, whether it's the spaghetti-eyed creature or a more traditional one, then it does happen.
And, you know, you may
think, very thankful for that,
that the Black Death and the Spanish flu were just horrible, horrible things with the huge numbers of people they killed. But here's a point. Your ancestors survived it because you're here. The people who died took up resources that your ancestors then got. So you may owe your existence to those diseases.
Otherwise, you might not have the resources to be able to survive
exactly.
Back then. And your great, 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 great ancestors may not have actually made it, and you might not be here.
Precisely.
So bad things can come with good things, like all the crabs that are showing up. Lots more food's going to be available this year and that for the fish that did survive. Because the more you feed a crab and the more you feed a shrimp, the more they grow, the more eggs they have, the faster they breed, all that. They're not on a timeline like a human. Okay, you're 12 years old or 20 years old and this is what happens to you. The more you feed them, the more they grow. It's just the way they were designed. So lots of food around, they grow fast, they have babies fast, and there's going to be a lot more shrimp, a lot more crabs, a lot more food. There's another thing that should happen is Charlotte Harbor is one of the largest estuaries in the United States. And why is there commercial fishing allowed in it?
I don't know.
Why do they allow
other than
shrimping? And why do they allow shrimping and commercial catch?
Nobody ever threw them out.
The estuary. They did in Tampa, and Tampa's not an estuary. It's a port. So why is it in Charlotte Harbor?
Tampa's an estuary.
It is a port.
There's
a port. Shipping port.
There's a port there, but it's still an estuary. It's still fed by rivers. It still has grass.
It is an estuary, but not like Charlotte Harbor.
It's not like Charlotte Harbor. That much is true. No question. Hey, I'm not going to argue in favor of that. I'm just saying it never occurred that they got thrown out.
Yeah, and I don't know why. I mean, there's so many things you're just not allowed to do. I don't understand why there's a commercial industry left in an estuary that they won't allow us to go and fix the creeks and plant mangroves and do all this because it's an estuary.
Can't put in oyster bars, can't do any of that stuff.
You cannot do anything to help the harbor, but they allow people to harm it all the time, and I don't understand. Okay, Jug Creek Shoals.
I got nothing.
Okay. Unfortunately, I don't either. I haven't heard a thing. All right. Burnt Store Two Pines?
Burnt Store Two Pines has been, again, pretty good. The same kind of general mixed bag of fish that we're seeing down around Matt Lachey and over on the west side, we're seeing there in Burnt Store Two Pine. Not quite as many redfish coming out of the Burnt Store area as I would have hoped to see, but they are finding some of those snook out there. They are finding some smaller trout. And then on the outside of the bar, your mixed bag of stuff, along with some tarpon. And some of those tarpon down there have been willing to play.
Really?
Yeah. And not all of them are small ones either. Take that trolling model bait buster, chuck it out there behind the boat, and just run in about 6 to 8 feet of water off the bar. See what you can do.
I've got my goal is before I found out we were expanding, I was going to do a lot of tarpon research, and I still hope to be able to get a few days in going out trolling a lot of different lures to see how fast, how far, which lures we're going to get tarpon to go off on these things. Because I do know they hit these trolling baits. It's just sometimes you got to put the time in to go, how fast do I have to pull this? How deep? How far back from the boat? All these things make a huge difference. And if you're willing to put the time in, and I've got to be able to dedicate a couple of days to doing this, make lots of notes, okay, trolling at this speed, this, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And to find out which of these lures are going to be the most effective. So I'm hoping to get time to do that. Hobbs Point, Pirate Harbor, all the way on up the east side.
Pirate Harbor, I haven't heard anything out of there, but moving further up the east side, how far do you want to go? Alligator Creek?
Alligator Creek.
Yeah. So, again, that same redfish and snook up underneath the mangrove edges and occasionally out on the flats. I haven't heard about any tarpon up in that area, specifically when you get further out in the middle of the harbor, which we're going to do here in a minute, then we're getting some tarpon out there. But that may be happening up closer to the bar edge if you want to give it a shot and see what's going on. I wouldn't be too surprised if they're in that area.
Okay. Yeah, it's surprising how the east side came back alive where there was literally no fish there for a while. And, you know, but the east side's been kind of like that for the last 4 years. In the wintertime, when the east side of the harbor should be loaded up with redfish and snook and all that, there's been almost none. And we say, what happened to all the redfish? Where are they? Where did all the redfish go? There's no redfish here. Fall comes along, and there's redfish everywhere. Now, we've been going through this for 3 to 5 years, where we think there's no redfish at all. Where did they go? This is horrible. This is a bad thing. And then all of a sudden, pow!
Now, your theory was a hole in the space-time continuum that they were swimming out through.
And I'm still not convinced that's not the true theory. A hole in the space-time continuum, somewhere back on one of the creeks on the east side, maybe between a couple islands, where these fish just kind of go through and go to a different dimension, maybe like fish nirvana. Maybe they get there and it's all nothing but mangroves and everything else. Because we always think, you know, home is good. And sometimes even when it's not as good as where we are, we still want to go back home.
You're saying they're getting homesick for having for Charlotte Harbor and getting run over? That's what they want?
I know people that go back to cities after being in the country, and they go back there and go, oh, it's good to be home. And you're thinking, okay, yeah, you got muggers and pollution and, I mean, just people everywhere, and this is your idea of good? But, you know, for some people that is right.
I guess it's all about where you grow up.
Yeah, well, look at people. I mean, look at how people love New York. I mean, I've been there. I think the people are awesome. I like the stuff you can do, but I can't wait to get the hell out of there. And I think it's an amazing place. I mean, from the food to all the stuff you can do and walking around at night and during the day. And everybody I've ever met in New York's been just pretty much awesome. I wouldn't live there on a bet. I mean, I don't like the fact that I got neighbors within 50 feet or 100 feet of me.
Right.
But, you know, I've got some great neighbors. It's nothing to complain about.
Never mind neighbors 20 feet in every direction.
Yeah. I mean, 20 feet, try 12 inches or 8 inches. They're living in apartment buildings where the walls are 4 to 6 inches thick between them and the next person. Been there, done that, ain't doing that again. Yeah, I will live in my truck. I'm happier in my truck. I can pull my truck under an overpass and be just peachy. You know, at least I'll be good. All right, Alligator Creek.
The creek itself, I haven't heard anything.
Okay, the skating rink?
Skating rink, you know, I haven't actually heard anything out of the skating rink.
All right, we'll just put some question marks there. And Ponce de Leon Park.
Ponce de Leon down to Whorehouse. I've heard some mixed smaller trout, a couple of bigger trout. I have not heard the redfish there. I have not heard the snook there.
I've heard a ladyfish. So, let's go into the PGI canals.
PGI canals, mostly it's been the black drum and the baby tarpon. But there's been pretty good numbers of both. Just like in the Port Charlotte canals, black drum don't seem to be gathered up. They seem to be mostly singles, and most people are spotting them cruising along the surface. A lot of the fish in there have been bigger ones, so we're not seeing too many of those 20 inch and smaller fish. We're seeing mostly fish in that 30 inches and above class, so some pretty good ones up in there. The tarpon have mostly been 30 inches and below, which are fun to play with, and they seem to be more actively feeding in there than they are in a lot of other places.
And what's really funny is a guy was in today, and I was showing him what lures to go catch the tarpon with, East Spring Lake and some of those in PGI. And he was saying, well, what about the, you know, Bait Buster and the, you know, these other ones that we talk about all the time? And I said, well, that's how you can tell who's really made the guys in here kind of upset, because that's what they give them to go canal fishing for tarpon.
Now, on the other hand, if DOA would make a Bait Buster that mini. Was a little teeny tiny one, like the size of those little terror eyes.
Oh, my God.
Right?
I'm gonna call Mark.
I suggested this to Mark a couple of years ago, and he said, yeah, that's an idea, and never did anything. But maybe if you suggest it.
Well, I'm going to call Mark, because my intention, when we expand the store, we're going to be literally more than twice as big as we are. I'm going to carry every lure Mark makes. I mean, every color, every size, every model.
Because why not?
Well,
because DOA is awesome.
If you have, you've met Mark Nichols. He is truly... I classify him as a good friend, not just a business thing, and one of the people I respect most in the industry. And I want to be a DOA showcase store. I want to have, if you want a DOA, I want to be able to sell it to you. And Mark Nichols is just one of the most awesome people I've ever met. So I want to be literally a DOA showcase store. And I want to talk about, has anybody caught any fish on Gilcrest Pier?
I haven't heard about it. If they have, they may have. Didn't tell me. Did they tell you?
They didn't tell me anything either. All right. Here's a tricky one. The Alligator Creek Reef.
I have not heard of anybody actually fishing the reef.
I got nothing either. Richie was out there, caught a couple of cobia, but I don't know if a normal human could.
Right. That's a specialist kind of thing. So
I'm going to put cobia.
If you have the cobia whistle, then maybe, but.
Possible.
Most people don't have that.
This guy, we've got a customer, Richie, who is one of the nicest people ever to walk the earth. He's just really, really nice. And he loves cobia. He loves catching them. I don't think he hardly keeps any at all, if he does keep any. But he loves catching cobia. It's his dream fish. And this guy can catch cobia when there's no cobia there. I mean,
which is something.
I really think Richie goes out there and he's like, maybe he's got something, you know, that
maybe he brings the cobia with him.
It could be, because there'll be nobody has seen any cobia. It's been 2 months, and Richie comes in, oh, I caught 5 cobia on the reef today. Really? And I know he does, because I've sat there not catching cobia, not catching fish, watching Richie reel in 2 nice cobia during the time I sat there. So
crazy, I mean, man, crazy.
Yeah, he's awesome. He's just dialed it in. All right, the deep holes in the harbor.
That's where some of your better tarpon have been hanging out. It's not what I would call an amazing bite. What is amazing is the number of fish that are out there. lots and lots of tarpon to see, and it's mixed sizes. You know, most of them are not going to be teeny tiny babies, most of them are not going to be huge monstrous fish, but anywhere from, let's say, 25 up to 125 pounds. That's mostly what we're seeing, and the fish are pretty thick in there. There's enough of them that you can hang out around groups of fish and watch them feeding, watch them rolling. Catching them, again, a little bit tricky. My best suggestion for you there, because they're mostly feeding on very small bait fish, but they're occasionally feeding on the ladyfish, the mackerel, that are in there feeding on those very small bait fish. Try to match that hatch, not those teeny tinies, and put out either a ladyfish or something like a hoagie soft plastic that looks a little bit like a ladyfish, and see if you can make it happen with that. Slow troll that hoagie. You can slow troll the live ladyfish, or better yet, just let it sit out there underneath a float. And if you're not getting any success with that, try fishing deep as well. Just because you're seeing those tarpon on the surface doesn't mean that's the only place that they're actually feeding. If your ladyfish underneath the floats aren't getting anything, then put a sinker in front of one, let it get down closer to the bottom, see if that gets any results.
Okay, bait reports I put, there is some bait, but it's
teeny tiny.
Teeny tiny. And
unlike big giant stingrays, this is teeny tiny bait fish.
Yeah.
The opposite.
All right, and freshwater fishing.
Freshwater fishing has been mostly good for people who are willing to go early in the day. We've had some pretty good gully washer storms that have produced some strong inflows in some of our canal areas, and those have been pretty good fishing. You know, it doesn't really matter what time of day at that point. When you've got those heavy, strong flows like that, the fish are going to be gathered up around it. Nobody's catching really big bass that I'm hearing about, but plenty of guys are catching those 2 to 4 pound fish. And they seem to be fairly active around the spillways. And you don't have spillways to fish, fish early in the mornings. Those gamblers, that's a good shiner substitute. Or there's always shiners.
We're selling a lot of shiners. We're going through a bunch of them. Actually going through quite a few night crawlers as well. And that's something I wasn't really thinking would be going good at this time of year.
Well, that is for the other fish that's eating right now, which is not the bass, but the tilapia. The tilapia fishing has been pretty strong. Those guys do not care at all about high water temperatures. They don't care about low oxygen levels. Tilapia come from parts of Africa where they're dealing with water temperatures that are sometimes 100 degrees plus. So they're built to take that kind of stuff. As long as, you know, it stays under 105, they're probably going to be A-okay, and we haven't seen anything close to that. The tilapia have been fairly actively feeding, and we've seen some nice fish, some in that 3 to 4 pound range, that have been eating worms fished on the bottom.
Okay. Tarpon report. Let's see.
Where did we have them? Copy paste.
Well, I'm getting the tarpon map up. Okay. Just let me get my brush set. Sized. Okay, we're going to go with red, which is your best bet for tarpon. I'm going to say deep holes in the harbor.
Yeah, deep holes in the harbor is probably the place to be.
Now, over by the reef at all?
I haven't heard about it, but it would be very normal for them to be there when this is what's going on.
Okay, well, so, I'm not going to put anything there then. What about down by Two Pines?
I don't know if I would go red.
How about yellow?
I'd go yellow.
Okay. Any place else red or yellow?
I don't think there's any place else I'd go red with, but you can put yellows throughout the upper harbor. I mean, just in the open areas where you've had bait fish, you've had tarpon. So it's not like, you know, this dot is exactly where the tarpon are going to be. It's this area is where you expect some tarpon to be moving around.
Okay. There really isn't a lot else we can put in there, is there? How about in the beaches? I've heard a little bit of chance of tarpon on the beaches.
I haven't heard about it. So, I mean, put your dot.
I don't know. I'm not. If we both can't agree on it, there's not even a chance.
Gotcha.
You know, I don't mind. I go with the yellow 50-50s, and I'll go with a chance if we think there's a chance. But if we don't agree on chances, I'm not going with it. Okay. Well, anyway, that's our tarpon report, and I've got enough to fill in some of that. Anything else? I mean,
well, we ranted, we raved, We disagreed, we agreed, we talked about fishing, we talked about spots. I think that's pretty much all we had planned to do.
Yeah, I wasn't, works for me. I got the date on that. I can save the tarpon thing, get that up on there.
I mean, we can say we miss Robert, but...
Yeah, Robert's recovering from a bit of elective surgery.
Mm.
How's that for putting it?
Finally got that rhinoplasty. It's about time.
So, we should have blind tarpon back with us next week. And see, now I made it official. I'm going to use that.
That's okay.
That's going to be... That's what Robert calls himself, blind tarpon. I think it's kind of neat. So when you see Robert say, hey, blind tarpon,
And if he punches you in the face, then it turned out he didn't like the nickname. So.
Robert's not really a violent one. He's mean, but he's not viral.
He could spill over into violence under the right circumstances. I don't know. I haven't driven him to that point, but there's going to come a day.
I think we pushed him pretty close. And this is my new attempt. So,
love you, Robert.
Yeah. Okay, blind tarpon. We'll see you next week. I know, this is still on the recording, so he hasn't heard it yet. So maybe when he listens later.
Yeah, maybe.
We'll figure out. Okay. But we'll be loading the show in a few minutes, and then I'll know what Robert had to say. So, let me...
And just a reminder, if anybody is looking to learn how to fish around this area, fishcoach.net, give me a... email, give me a call, 941-276-9657. The Fish Coach is still open for business.
So, Josh Olive is the Fish Coach, and he will be appearing at ponds, creeks, bays, inlets, and gulf waters all over in the area. So, watch for him coming to a bay or inlet near you, the Fish Coach. For some reason, it just sounded like a James Bond movie, I'm sitting here thinking, Josh Olive, James Bond.
I
like my rods casted, not thrown.
All right. I gotta go.
Bye.